What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
In association with Viatel Technology Group, IT leaders breathe easy with Viatel Managed Cybersecurity. Viatel.com.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we're looking back at two decades of Facebook. From the fun to the fallout and the future, we'll look at the impact that Facebook has had on society. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But I want to bring you this little snippet that I found from 2004. This is an itty-bitty baby Mark Zuckerberg talking about his vision for his platform.
When we first launched, we were hoping for, you know, maybe 400, 500 people. Harvard didn't have a Facebook, so that's the gap that we were trying to fill. And now we're at 100,000 people, so who knows where we're going.
Yeah, that was Mark Zuckerberg talking about Facebook back in 2004. The company, 20 years on, now has around 3 billion active members on the platform. And it has not been smooth sailing over the last 20 years. But we want to start by going back to the good old days. And Cullum Bugh of Off The Ball is with me now. Cullum, how are you?
Hi, Jess.
So we spoke about Bebo a little while ago. And I think we both have that nostalgic growl for it. Do you feel the same about Facebook?
Oh, yeah. Are you going out tonight? On the public page.
On the public page.
Of Facebook.
Yeah.
For everyone to see. A magical time. Like, Facebook was enormous, wasn't it? I mean, that's stating the blindingly obvious. But, like, what are we, the 20th anniversary,
yeah?
Right? So, like, it really took off. I think it was 2006 it started gaining real traction.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it Sean Parker's idea, a.k.a. Justin Timberlake, to add photos?
Yes.
And that really helped it to a new dimension. But I was late to it. I set up my Facebook in May 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Days before I went on my J1 to New York. And we had very little money there, like not much resources. Now, for example, in New York, so you had to go to the local library if you wanted internet access.
This is
summer 2009. And you had to log into a computer and then go onto your Facebook account. And it was the biggest thrill.
But it was an appointment in your day to go and check your Facebook.
Huge.
Like figured I've been on Facebook, I think 15 years now. And so my entire life from when I was 19 to 34 is stored there in a digital archive owned by Facebook. But it was that thing. And like I see it now when I look at my memories, you've got people replying to a question on my wall, but you don't see my question because it was just, that was how you communicated. It was way before Facebook Messenger was a thing.
Mm.
You used to just write on people's walls and everything was so public. And it was just, I don't know, I find it a little bit cringe now when I go back and look at them.
Do you remember creating an event?
Yeah.
And it could be like someone's birthday.
A free gaff.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
Someone would create a free gaff party page thing.
Tom Morty's been in touch saying, do you remember when older people would post stuff like, according to Harvard University, there are swamp people who are using your photos without permission? This post is to say that the swamp people do not have permission to use my photos.
Colin, that still happens. Like, this is the thing, right? So before we get too far ahead, I think we should acknowledge that Facebook was the place to be for people our generation when it came out. Bit by bit, it's kind of died away. And those type of things of copy and paste this if I could call you in case of an emergency. You know, those kind of posts that your mum's auntie's cousin's dog puts up and it's just, it's nonsensical. That's probably 90% of what I see. That and ads is all I see now when I go onto my Facebook. None of my friends are actually utilising the platform.
Ever. I have it and then I might go on it every so often, but it is essentially a publisher now.
Yeah.
Is the way I see it. Like, people get their news, or they used to a few years ago, but sure, like, if you ask a person under the age of 25 they use Facebook, they will literally laugh at you.
Yeah.
I love those examples of just laughing. But when I was that age and younger, Facebook was everything, like, because that was the transition from Bebo, and it was before Twitter got kind of ubiquitous. You know, there was certain people who used Twitter, but it wasn't huge. And Instagram was really in its infancy. So everybody was going to Facebook. And you'd have pages created for the most frivolous of things. So it'd be like going up to communion for seconds. And then you'd click on that hyperlink. And the page would literally be just that line without a photo or a cover photo. And that was it. That was the whole page. And you could get to know someone really well if you had just met them by going on their Facebook profile and checking the type of comedy pages that they like. That was a matchmaking exercise. That was kind of basic Tinder back then. What does this person like?
Yeah. Now, that since proved to be, I suppose, a little bit of a scary insight into individuals, and assumptions can be made by that from an advertising point of view. And we're going to talk about the whole Cambridge Analytica thing with Stephen O'Leary in just a few minutes. But, like, have you ever gone on and looked at the assumptions that Facebook has made on you, about you, based on your friends and ads that you've interacted with and locations that you've checked into and all that kind of stuff?
No, like, as in, like, it's listening to you and it's learning you.
It's learning you, yeah. So if you go into your Facebook, if you go to your Facebook page and if you tap on the little right-hand corner and go to your settings, they have made things more transparent to get a better understanding of how, when and why they use your data. But you can also see the assumptions made about you for advertisers based on your age and what you've interacted with and all that kind of stuff. And I think the reason why we're delving so deeply into Facebook is because it was the first social media platform that firstly has dominated for as long as they have. But also in 2006, when they brought about the news feed, that was the first time a lot of us had encountered content that was algorithmically put before us, if you know what I mean. So rather than you seeing the latest post that I put up, you'd see what Facebook's algorithm had decided you'd see. And so I think it's, when I look back on it now, I just find it really interesting because so much of our digital lives have been lived on Facebook, but we didn't know how much we were handing over to them and how much we were being manipulated by them. And I'm not saying manipulated in a bad way, but just, you know, they had a lot of power.
There was a naivety probably from everyone at that point. So when you logged on, it was all of the people you knew, like everything was going on there. Like I told you a story off air about, I went through this glass door when I was 12 years old, right? And then 10 years later, I was in college. And
well, hang on, when you say glass door, as in like it was an accident and you were very, very badly injured.
Yeah, yeah. And then like, yeah, I would say the bones of a decade later, mind my own business on Facebook and UCC. And then a girl that was there that night, like, because there was five or six of us running around, she publicly posted, "Are you the same Colin Bowie that went through the glass door in Mallorca in 2001? And that was for everyone to see, because that was before Messenger came in.
Yeah.
So it was, you would really share fairly private conversations on your wall on Facebook and you'd have no shame about it.
Would you consider deleting your Facebook?
No, I mean, like, what's the point? Because there's good archive stuff. Like, there's, like, photos from over a decade ago, which brings you back into that time. Like, I was mentioning being on a J1 in New York in that library in 2009, and there are photos, probably the first, well, they would have, of course, been the first photos I uploaded or were tagged in at that time. And it's like, you are transported back to that era. So I wouldn't delete it for that reason, because it's actually storing my photos. And also, it's hilarious, like, watching or going back in old posts.
Yeah, but you see, that's something that I don't know from a societal point of view if it's a good thing or not.
Right.
Because I think, particularly when you're the age that we were at when we started on Facebook, you're kind of young and naive and arrogant and you think you have the world sussed and you've got a chip on your shoulder and you make these ridiculous statements that you and I today wouldn't stand over.
Yeah.
And I think there have been so many examples where people have been hung out to dry based on stuff that they posted on social media ages ago. And the notion, like, I go through my memories thing pretty much every day and I delete stuff and I've been doing it for ages now. And there's some of the stuff that I sounded like such a gobshite. And I know you're going to jump in and say you still do. Thank you so much. That's very funny. But I just think there's less space for us now to kind of disown our previous selves or evolve from our previous selves because everything is stored in this digital archive.
Do you think employers still look at people's Facebook when they're deciding whether to hire them?
I don't know about that. And I don't even know if it's about the employer thing. I think it's just growing up in the digital age, it kind of gives me the ick when everything is just stored there in an archive owned by big tech. Now is a good time to go through and maybe clean it up a little bit.
But you won't do that.
I do it every day.
The memories.
Mm-hmm.
And you delete old posts.
Yeah.
What are you hiding from, like?
Not hiding from, but I don't understand. I kind of wondering, like, what was the need for
that? But that was you then, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a memory of your old self. That's what Facebook is for people. Like, it's a scrapbook. It's an old album that your parents would look at. That's our album.
But why would you want to?
Because it's a part of your life, like, that's part of your history. And for people our age, Facebook was a massive part of their early adulthood.
Yeah. But like you can go on and download your entire Facebook archive.
Ah, but there's no thrill in that, you know.
But there's no thrill in me.
There is.
No.
Scrolling through.
No. Amazing.
What's your problem with Facebook?
I don't. There's something about it I just don't like. And no, I don't.
You've never liked Facebook. You've never given it a chance.
I've been there for like 14, 15 years.
I don't know. I think I don't think Facebook owes you anything. You know, I think it gave you a start.
I think I gave it a hell of a lot of data that it used and abused and monetized.
And?
And
but so do all the other platforms that you continue to use.
Yeah, but I'm more aware of it now. I like the way I post on every other platform ever since. I'll never, ever forget it. And again, we'll be talking about it in a minute. The day the Cambridge Analytica story broke, right? Uh-huh. I was at my desk and I was about to go on Pat Kenny. And I went in and read the terms of use of Facebook Messenger. And at the time, it said that in order to use Facebook Messenger, you had to accept a thing that gave Messenger access to your entire call log and your entire phone book. So say, like the example that we figured out on air was that Pat Kenny is not on Facebook, has never been on Facebook. But Pat Kenny's phone number was stored in my Facebook archive because he's called me on my phone before. That level of data and diving and grabbing is just bananas. Now, they've since changed it, I should say, but like we were so naive.
This is a great out of context Jess Kelly piece.
What?
Anyone turning on the radio right now.
What?
Pat Kenny is not on Facebook. In an
breaking
angry tone.
News. No, I don't know. I think like we've been having chats in the office here about whether or not Facebook is a good thing for society. Overall, do you think it's a good thing? Should it have, like, would the world be different?
Mm. Without it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It was like the start of so many people's digital journey, if you want to be pretentious about it. But it was, though, like, it's had its time, I would say. It's an antiquated social media platform now compared to its rivals.
Yeah.
Absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you can't sit there and tell me that it wasn't an important part of people's lives or and also a cherished memory for many. I don't think there's much love for it anymore. I don't know if that's down to Mark Zuckerberg himself and there's kind of a mistrust of him. And, you know, multi-million/billionaires and how we maybe he took advantage of people's data and people are much more aware of that now. Like they've been educated as the years go by, like you say, and like you'd be in the advanced, you know, cohort of that because you work in the industry, but people are aware that like data has been taken and we live in a GDPR world now where people are more sensitive to it. They might not do anything about it, but they're certainly knowing of it. So as a result, in hindsight, people look back on Facebook and maybe they're slightly uneasy about what they shared.
Mm.
But at the same time, people smile when they think about it.
Do they?
I think so. You don't?
No.
Why not? What's the difference between that and Bebo?
So I think the difference is that Bebo was just me and my direct friends, all of whom I was in constant contact with because we were in school. I also think the monetization of the platform wasn't as explicit as Facebook. Like I remember when Facebook started to get populated by news articles and by ads and you'd kind of have to scroll three or four times before you'd see a post by a human that you know. And I think the more that that happened, the less attractive an offering it became.
Yeah, but that's now.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Facebook then. I mean, like when I this whole segment, I've been thinking about it a decade and a half ago.
Yeah.
Not the current iteration of it. Like I think Facebook you know, suffers in comparison to Bebo, because Bebo was warmer and it looked nicer,
but it was also
more cuddly and it was more personal, whereas Facebook had a very kind of Reddit like cold interface, and therefore it was all to do with your words initially and then photos, which maybe some people feel in hindsight was too intrusive.
But I also think Bebo was only around for like a wet weekend, as we spoke about before, whereas Facebook has made, like, it's still here today and it's still like they do have active users. And also it should be noted that in certain parts of the world, Facebook is synonymous with the internet.
If Facebook ended in a certain year, do you think it would be better remembered and thought of now?
Yeah.
What year would that have been? Like 2013, 14?
Yeah, exactly. Before 2015, 2016. Because, like,
but the world changed in 2016 in general.
Yeah, but I also think, like, the Cambridge Analytica thing, if that hadn't happened as a result or like with the whole Trump presidency, it was bound to happen at some stage because there were too many loopholes in place. We were too naive. We clicked accept to all of these terms and conditions without reading a single one. And it was always going to end badly because of the predictions it made about us and the data that we handed over.
See, despite our disagreements here about how we remembered it, I do agree that part two of Facebook's life has been the kind of cynical, sinister part of it.
Mm.
But I remember part one. That's how I'd summarise the whole discussion for me.
Okay.
That would be my memory of it.
Okay. You can be Little Miss Sunshine and I'll just be Debbie Downer.
It works.
It's accurate.
Let us know what you think out there, folks. Facebook. Yay or nay.
Do. You can email techtalk@newstalk.com. As I said in just a second, Stephen O'Leary of Alitigo will be here to look at the fallout of Facebook, and we will look ahead to the future. Cullum, thanks a million.
Jess, thank you.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Mr. Zuckerberg, this is an administrative board hearing. You're being accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy by creating the website www.facemash.com. You're also charged with being in violation of university policy on distribution of digitized images. Before we begin with our questioning, you're allowed to make a statement. Would you like to do so?
I've already apologized in the crimson to the ABHW, to Fuerza Latina, and to any women at Harvard who may have been insulted, as I take it that they were. As for any charges stemming from the breach of security, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
You deserve recognition.
I believe I pointed out some pretty gaping holes in your system.
Excuse me, may I?
Yes.
Mr. Zuckerberg, I'm in charge of security for all computers on the Harvard network, and I can assure you of its sophistication. In fact, it was that level of sophistication that led us to you in less than 4 hours.
4 hours?
Yes, sir.
That would be impressive, except if you had known what you were looking for, you would have seen it written on my dorm room window.
Yeah, that is a clip from The Social Network starring Jesse Eisenberg as Mark Zuckerberg. And it's one of my favourite films of all time, not just because I'm obviously super interested in the topic, but everything from the soundtrack to the acting to the poetic license that was taken. It is just phenomenal. If you haven't seen it, go as soon as the show ends and watch it. It is phenomenal. Before the break, we were chatting to Cullum Buig about the fun sides of Facebook. Back in the day, setting up an event page for a free gaff or whatever it might have been. But now we're going to look at the fallout, because it's fair to say that Facebook has had its fair share of negative headlines over the last two decades. And in my opinion, the Cambridge Analytica scandal is at the heart of many of them. And it was definitely, for me, a turning point. Stephen O'Leary of Alitigo is with me now. Stephen, would you agree with my assessment? Was Cambridge Analytica the critical moment, or had the tide already started to turn against them?
It was beginning to turn. And I think some of that had to do with the sheer size of the network. So when you pass 1 billion users and you have that many people connected to a single network and you start to become a central player, particularly from an advertising point of view, then anyone who provided traditional advertising, so think about TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, magazines, they start to look in much more detail at where their competition's coming from. And so there was almost an inevitability that as Facebook's popularity as an advertising provider and an advertising platform increased, and they started to take much more market share from an advertising point of view, then traditional media, and that includes, you know, investigative journalism and others, well, I started to train them as an organization. And so it was probably in the years, you know, kind of 2016, 2017, that we really started to see an increase in those questions being asked about, essentially, you know, how much power does this one network have? And it did culminate, I think, you know, and a kind of a tipping point was the 2016 US presidential election. But the Cambridge Analytica story also isn't black and white. And I think what we've learned in the years since has been really interesting about actually the role that it played. And really, there's been a huge amount of investigation done into this. And it didn't make anywhere near as many headlines kind of 2 or 3 years later, as investigations almost invariably never do. But in 2021, it was widely reported that actually Cambridge Analytica's impact on voter behavior was almost non-existent. So I'm happy to kind of maybe recap on where that story brought us before, but where we got to in the end was actually something that said, they said they were doing this and they had this impact, but actually there's no evidence to back it up.
Yeah, and I think we should probably delve a little bit deeper into that, because I do think it was, like, as I said to Cullum, it was one of the first times I think people sat up and realised that, you know, these social networks where we spend a huge amount of our time may not be fully transparent when it comes to our data, or maybe we should be reading the terms and conditions that apply when you download things like Facebook Messenger and so on. So I suppose let's just recap what the allegations against Cambridge Analytica were, the fallout, and then that further investigation that you alluded to there.
So social networks, one thing they've gotten much better at probably over the last kind of 6 to 8 years is privacy and data privacy. But there's no doubting that in the early days of most social networks, and as the industry was beginning to emerge, it was relatively easy to scrape and mine data from some of these networks. And some of them had kind of very strong policies in place to prevent this, and others didn't. And really, this is not uncommon of any new technology, and social networks probably in the, you know, kind of the late 2000s and the early 2010s, you know, that was still relatively new, right? I mean, the networks themselves were relatively new. So it was invariable or inevitable that organizations and companies would take advantage of this data that was available. And that's what we saw in the case of Cambridge Analytica. So what they proposed or said they could do was create extremely personalized advertising targeted at really specific demographics. So instead of just having an ad on TV or an ad on the radio that would go out and be heard or seen by a certain percentage of the population, they claimed to be able to target at a much more hyper local and hyper targeted way. So imagine instead of targeting people in Ireland, they would target people in Cork who were interested in Manchester United and were over the age of 16 and also liked Taylor Swift. So they would get to this really specific demographic. And as a result of all these knowns, they would then create a type of ad that they knew would have the biggest impact. And where this started to come to the fore was in relation to the 2016 US presidential election and the claims that actually, as an organization, they had mined the data, voter data, or the data to do with those who were going to vote in the elections from Facebook and were using it to essentially hyper-target the electorate ahead of the US presidential elections.
Mm. Now, I remember when this story broke, and I remember so much of the reaction was, this is outrageous, this is appalling, can you please give me a step-by-step guide on how to delete my Facebook profile because I'm so appalled. I don't remember as much conversation of people going, geez, they have all this information because I manually put it in and I interacted in such a way that gave my data. Now, there's no question that what was done was I suppose, circumspect, to put it politely. But I do wonder how much of an onus is on us, the consumer, for blindly signing up to things and checking in at places and saying that we like Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran and liking their pages and so on.
Yeah, so there's probably two parts to this. The first is probably to close out almost the Cambridge Analytica piece, and it's kind of double-edged, right? So what the outcome of the investigations was that they didn't misuse data in the EU, and that, you know, for them, obviously, that's a good result, right? But on the flip side, part of the reason this was found to be the case was that actually they had zero impact. And so they had claimed to be able to influence elections and shape politics, but the reality was they were massively overstating their impact. And that's ultimately what came out of this, that actually all this data they had access to and all this information was not being used in any effective kind of way, and that really their impact was literally non-existent. And there's been, you know, multiple academic papers written to this effect and a huge amount of time and resource put into it. But on the flip side, coming back to that idea of us giving our information away or providing it to third parties, there's this really easy way of thinking about social networks and beyond when it comes to providing data. And it's the idea that if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. So if Facebook is free, or X is free, or TikTok is free, or you name any kind of social network, if you're able to access it by simply just providing your information and then turning it on and being entertained, well, then the flip side is you're going to be served advertising through that. And the more they understand as social networks about you, the better they can target that advertising. And in theory, the more effective the advertising can be. So I think what we started to see was a much greater level of awareness emerging in the last 10 years about this fact and about the trade-off, and that it wasn't that you had to leave any of the networks. And in fact, we saw all the networks grow. We saw new networks emerge. But instead, that it wasn't at that point really fair to be saying, oh, I had no idea, because now we did have an idea. Now it was mainstream news. And that's one of the things that the Cambridge Analytica scandal brought to the fore, was there was an increased level of awareness. And so then you had a choice to make. Were you comfortable giving your data away and providing it to a third party in return for the entertainment and network that you were getting? Or did you decide, actually, no, the trade-off isn't worth it? And I think what a lot of people did was they took a happy medium. So they said, well, actually, no, there's a lot of value in the social network, and actually, I do want to spend time there, but I'm going to really focus on the privacy settings. And so I'm going to make changes that limit the amount of information the network has about me, and critically, how that information is being used. And that's probably been the big change we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I think it's important and only fair to point out that Facebook did implement a whole host of new settings and controls for users, and particularly, like, not just because of Cambridge Analytica, but also because of GDPR as well. So you could now go in, and you still to this day can go in, and you can control your privacy in a much easier way than previously before. You can also see, and one of my favorite things was going through and seeing the assumptions that Facebook had made about me and what ads I was getting and why. And it's never about, as I said to Cullum, it's never about you, the individual. It's about someone in your demographic with the same kind of interests who have interacted with this, that and the other. And that's how you get the ads that are seen before or put before you. Let's just talk about the value of the ads business for a second, because if you were a small business, you didn't need to have a website. You could just have a Facebook page. And it did seem to unlock massive potential, particularly for SMEs, to engage with a new customer base without a ridiculous amount of expense. So that side of things should be acknowledged and celebrated as we look back at 2 decades as well.
Like, without question, there are hundreds of thousands of small businesses that would not have existed had it not been for Facebook as a social network. And critically, actually, their acquisition of Instagram and WhatsApp along the way, Instagram in particular, as another network. Because when that occurred, it was obviously huge news. And there are questions today that if the same deal was brought forward, would the acquisition have passed and gotten through regulatory scrutiny. But it did at the time. And what that did was it took arguably the fastest growing social network in the world at the time in Instagram, a legacy provider in terms of Facebook, and it merged those two things together. And that really was a kind of a, you know, a lightning rod. It was a really central point in terms of the growth of both networks. Mm-hmm. And critically, from an advertising point of view, you got this incredible crossover of information about users. And in a way, one of the major advantages social networks tend to have is their ability, particularly when it comes to e-commerce or people selling things online, is to directly connect the sale to the source of the lead. So, you know, traditionally the big challenge advertisers and those selling advertising have faced is, you know, well, can you prove that by listening to that ad on the radio or watching that ad on TV or seeing it in a magazine ultimately led to the person buying the car? But of course, with a social network, you can prove from a traffic point of view and in other ways that actually your Facebook advertising is, or your Meta or your Instagram or whatever the network is, actually leading to a conversion. And as soon as you're able to prove that, especially to a small business, well, then the small business can actually calculate the cost of the sale. So they can directly say, if I spend 100 euros on advertising on Facebook and I can get 500 euros worth of sales and my margin is X, well, then I'm just going to keep feeding it because I'm getting the return. And that's what you saw. You saw these kind of quite small brands in some cases explode in popularity and rack up massive sales in a very short period of time because there was this direct correlation between the ability to target from an advertising point of view and actually track it to a sale on a website later. And that was a game changer for an awful lot of small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, it's an important thing to acknowledge and appreciate about Facebook. Stay with me, Stephen, because when we come back, I want to look at some of the other trials and tribulations perhaps that the company has faced over the last two decades. Stay with us here on Newstalk.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. We are doing a Facebook special this week, looking back at two decades of the social media giant. Stephen O'Leary of Alitico is with me. And Stephen, before the break, we were talking through the impact of Cambridge Analytica and some of the other scandals that had plagued, I think is probably a fair enough word, the company over the last number of years. Another area that it transformed, and it's not as clear as to whether or not it's a good thing or not, is news and news outlets. Talk to me a little bit about what we saw from a news point of view when content started being cross-promoted on Facebook and the impact that had. And there was an awful lot of debate as to whether or not, firstly, Facebook should get a payment for having that content on its platform, and also if it should have stronger regulations or rules in place for the types of content that should be posted.
A lot of this came down to how do you define a news outlet? So one of the big talking points was, at what point do you have to carry some form of disclaimer or warning on content that although a piece of content appears to be coming from a news outlet, that actually there are serious questions as to the authentic nature of this news outlet or the really strong bias maybe of a news outlet, etc. So how the media interacts with not just Facebook, it's true of every social network, but Facebook, by virtue of being the biggest or probably the most important at the moment, is something that is it's a live issue, because within the last, you know, 6 to 12 months, we've seen further changes in terms of the algorithm and how Facebook decides to serve content that had a really big impact on traffic to traditional news providers and their websites. And you know, for better or worse, when things are good and you understand the algorithm and it's reliable and you know what you're going to get, well, then if you're a newsroom and you do dedicate resources to creating content specific for Facebook, or you do focus on, you know, kind of the integration of that social network into your distribution strategy, well, the returns can be massive, right? You can see huge increases in traffic to your website, which has a knock-on effect on readership, which has a knock-on effect on advertising. There can be, again, this really virtuous circle. Where the problems emerge is when you place so much faith or time or investment in a third party who ultimately doesn't owe you anything and doesn't have any skin in the game with you at a whim, or for any particular reason, if they decide they're going to change their strategy as a social network, well, then you can have a massive negative knock-on effect. And we've seen this occur at multiple times over the last probably decade. So as much as we've seen small businesses thrive and flourish and grow and emerge thanks to Facebook as a network and the advertising opportunities they've provided and that community growth opportunity, on the flip side, we've seen news organizations almost come and go because their strategy was so Facebook focused. And when Facebook changed the way they promoted or served news content, well, then there was a knock-on immediate impact on traffic to websites. And in some cases, it crippled organizations.
Another really interesting debate that has occurred many, many times over the two decades that Facebook has existed relates to the policing of content on the platform. And we alluded to it briefly in terms of news articles. But in terms of online abuse or cyberbullying, I don't know how many times I've said over the years here on News Talk that they adhere to their own community standards. Obviously, legislation is catching up at long last, and we have things now like the Digital Services Act. We have the Online Safety Commissioner here in Ireland. But that free reign that all social media platforms had for quite a while of just, you know, deciding within themselves what was right and what was wrong, and the role of the admins, that is an important part of this story as well.
It is. And I think this is one of those times when I feel we're really lucky to live in Europe. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the Digital Services Act, which is coming to effect, you know, within the last kind of 6 to 9 months, has had a really powerful impact on this. Because I think, again, to give credit to the networks, you know, it wasn't that when the DSA got introduced that they suddenly started doing things, you know, for, you know, again, for probably 5 to 10 years, different networks at different levels have invested in content moderation. And in fact, it's probably Musk's takeover at Twitter or X that has probably shone a light on the value of those content moderation teams and still the discretion that these big companies have as to whether or not they're going to resource them. But what the Digital Services Act brought in were transparency reports. And we're starting to see the first versions of those coming through. And they give a really interesting insight into the resources that are being dedicated by, you know, not just Facebook, but Snapchat, TikTok, and others into the moderation of, like, you know, illegal or hateful or fraudulent content. So we're really getting a good idea now of what these companies are doing to handle misinformation, disinformation, and that other type of content that shouldn't be on networks and shouldn't be possible to share. And look, there's no question that they're not getting it right and that there's a huge amount more to do. But they're also not just sitting on their hands and pretending it's not there. They've addressed it. And critically, you know, they have to comply now with this Digital Services Act. We know what the fines look like in the event of a failure to do so. So there's a really strong case for each of the networks, including Facebook, to continue to invest in this. And, you know, again, there's a lot of chat at the moment about AI and the concerns and worries about it. But part of the upside actually is how you can use AI to detect this content before it even gets published. And I think that's one of the things that we actually don't hear an awful lot about. I mean, except from Facebook themselves, obviously. But we don't hear an awful lot about actually the content that you never see because it never makes it out in the first place. I think the statistic, I don't have it to hand, but I'm almost certain it's 90% plus of harmful or abusive content never makes it onto the platform. Because actually the systems that are in place, the automated systems, actually prevent it from ever being shared in the first place. So there's an awful lot of work to do. And I think for anyone who's probably experienced harmful or abusive, you know, content online will attest to often the difficulties in having it removed or being able to report it. But there's no question that some networks are doing better than others. And certainly, again, to give them their dues, I think Facebook as a group are able to point to evidence and investment they're making through these transparency reports into the moderation of that illegal, hateful or fraudulent content.
We know that they rebranded Facebook, rebranded to Meta a few years ago, and it was all part of this big vision. When you look back at that rebranding and then you look at the progress that has happened towards the metaverse and the conversations that have had around it, what do you see when you look into your crystal ball as to what Meta slash Facebook will be over the coming years?
Oh, it's a great question. If I knew the answer, I'd be rich, right? I mean, like, again, look, hindsight is, you know, is 2020, right? As we regularly say, right? And there's definitely a case that 2 or 3 years ago, when the metaverse was as topical as it was and maybe held as much promise as we thought it did, that actually the investment that Meta were making and the rebrand and all that went with that maybe felt like it was a, you know, a good punt, a chance to maybe get ahead of the competition and to maybe save or re-energize what was probably at the time being described as a flailing network in terms of Facebook. We've already talked about the demographics and the aging population, etc. I think by any estimation, it's fair to say that that project has not delivered the type of results that Meta would have wanted. I think they've been clear about this on things like earnings calls and other places. And, you know, what's, I guess, emerged in tandem is a bit of a breakthrough, or an absolute breakthrough, in terms of artificial intelligence, and in particular, OpenAI and the success they've had. So I don't think the metaverse as an idea is going to completely go away. And I think there is still a lot of interest in things like headsets and how they're going to work. And obviously Apple's recent kind of announcements and new products in this space are, again, an interesting thing to look at, because it's not just a software play, which is obviously where Facebook traditionally sit, but there's a hardware play here too, in terms of the actual devices we will use to engage with the networks and these places. But I think, you know, the metaverse was a punt. It probably hasn't given the type of return that Meta more broadly, or Facebook, et cetera, would have wanted. And I think in a way, this is a lot of this has to do with timing, right? So I don't think we're not going to hear about it in the future. I think it'll be there. But I think this idea of us all engaging in some virtual world in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years, that feels like a stretch. I don't think we're there yet.
Okay, so I've left the easiest question for the very last question. I hope you're ready now. Overall, has Facebook been a good thing for society?
Wow. Yeah, that is easy, isn't it? I think it has been good. And you declare, I mean, I have to declare this strong bias here, right? So Olitico as an organization arguably wouldn't exist if mm-hmm. Facebook had never been built. Because if there's no social networks to analyze, well, then you don't really have a social media analytics company. So I am conscious of my bias, but I look at other things, right? So I take the example of, you know, my parents' generation, right? And I look at, you know, someone like my mom and the role the network plays for her from a community point of view. So she likes taking photographs, right? She's got a nice camera. And one of the things she does in her community is like take photographs. And so in the past, those would have been photographs she would have taken and shared maybe with friends or family, or emailed them to people or whatever. But now what she does when she goes down the village in Cork where she lives and kind of takes photographs of wildlife and other bits and pieces is she puts them on the community notice board. And she gets this really nice engagement from other people in the village who constantly tell her how much they love her photographs. And I know how much of a kick she gets from that. Mm-hmm. So I know all the bad. I know all the things that go wrong. I know the data concerns. I know the time wastage. I know the pressure this places on, you know, young people in particular. Like, there's a myriad of issues that social networks bring with them. But I see the positives too, and I observe the positives, and I see the connections these networks can make. And, you know, there's no question that our behavior and our usage of them will hopefully evolve and change and improve over time. Mm-hmm. And I think this, you know, as I said, the Digital Services Act, I think, is going to have a really positive impact on it. But my view is that there is enough good that's happened and enough positive change. You know, you go back to the Arab Spring and other things like this. There have been big enough moments where social networks have played a really important role that the world would be poorer without them. But I guess my wish for the next decade is that networks like Facebook and others continue to invest and focus on ways that they can be a force for good and essentially combat and mitigate against the kind of the dangers or the perilous ways they can be used.
Stephen O'Leary from Politico, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Jess.
And that's it from me this bank holiday weekend. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. And while you're there, make sure you hit subscribe to Inside the Crime Season 3. It's hosted by our courts correspondent, Frank Rainey, and it tells the story of 19-year-old Una Linsky, who disappeared on a 15-minute walk home from a bus stop very near her house in Meath in 1971. It's an incredible production. Definitely worth your time. Episode 1 came out last Tuesday. Episode 2 will be out this Tuesday. So hit subscribe while you're in the app, and every episode over the coming weeks will just land on your device. That's it from me, as I said. John Fardy's up next here with Screen Time. I'll chat to you next week.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.